Welcome to the Commercial Intelligence Briefing Podcast, brought to you by NAR Commercial, the National Association of Realtors. In this podcast, we'll have a conversation with Sam Foster. Sam is an executive vice president with Jones Lang LaSalle of Los Angeles. Sam is a member of the Signature Series Speakers Bureau, and he produces programs on starting and developing a prosperous tenant representation practice. And in this program, he'll also talk with us about View from the Edge, a novel program that he and several of his colleagues produce that talks about some new trends in commercial real estate development and reimagination. I'm your podcast host, Steve Lubetkin. As Executive Vice President of the Tenant Representation Group at Jones Lang LaSalle in Los Angeles, Sam's responsibilities include the representation of Mattel, Whirlpool, Xerox, and other corporate real estate clients. Before joining Jones Lang LaSalle, Sam was director of C.B. Richard Ellis's Madison Advisory Group. Throughout his career, he's effected or supervised transactions valued at more than $2.7 billion. He's got a Bachelor of Arts degree from the University of Southern California, where he's also served as a guest lecturer. He's a faculty member with the CCIM Institute and is a past president of the Los Angeles chapter. In addition to these accomplishments, Sam has been published in Urban Land, Professional Report, Commercial Investment Real Estate Journal, and Real Estate Southern California. He's also authored a novel, Alpha Male, which was published in 2002 by Daniel & Daniel. We spoke over Skype from his office in California. Sam, thanks for joining us on the Commercial Intelligence Briefing Podcast.
Thank you for inviting me, Steve.
Sam, you have been involved in the Signature Series on a couple of levels. You're working on a program about prosperous tenant representation with Amy Naraki, and you still do that. We talked about that a couple of years ago. We'll come back and maybe you can give us an update on that. But you also have another program that you're doing that seems to be very popular called View from the Edge, where you're talking about all the different classes of commercial real estate, but with a view from the edge. Talk a little bit about what that's all about.
Steve, this one is really exciting. There are four Signature Series speakers who are doing this together. Todd Clark from Albuquerque, New Mexico, Patricia Lynn from San Francisco, Jim Rosen from St. Louis, and myself. The reason there are four of us, because in our private practice, in our day jobs, if you will, each of us specialize in a different product type. Todd is an apartment house salesperson. Patricia moves office tenants around in San Francisco. I, industrial tenants, and Jim Rosen, retail tenants. And View from the Edge is not an attempt to give a current sketch of the market in the U.S. or even market trend lines, or for that matter, even short-term projections about where the market is going. It's a long-term, say 10-year out, sociologic view of the way changes, sociologic changes, architectural changes are changing the way people use real estate. And probably the easiest example to do with words instead of pictures is Patricia Lind in San Francisco. Patricia does a lot of work south of Market. South of Market used to be a very rough neighborhood. It has become very trendy, particularly with the social media firms, because they like the older buildings that they have down there. And there are many old brick buildings in that area that had essentially been abandoned, but have now been used where they've got open floor plates and interesting visual expression inside of the building. And we have all heard these stories about social media code writers who work with entirely open space, who may have a basketball hoop at one end of the floor plate, but who work obsessively 20 hours a day. And those buildings have to be constructed with showers. In the case of one of them, Zynga, in an attempt to attract people, put a kitchen into the building that wasn't just a kitchen. They got one of San Francisco's better known chefs to come down and run it. And the food they put out is so good that white collar necktie type guys like me are now being known to wear hoodies and flip-flops to try to sneak in and have lunch. That's a total change in the real estate. It's a cute story, but it's a total change in where the real estate is, how it's used. And so in View from the Edge, experts in each of the four asset classes talk about the things that are changing in America and how that is going to change the types of buildings that are occupied and where they're located 10 years from now.
San Francisco is always a community on the edge, Sam. What are some of the other edges that you talk about in the program?
Todd Clark, who is the apartment house specialist in Albuquerque, starts his presentation by showing a top-down view of a two-story frame and stucco 70s apartment community where all the doors face inboard to an interior court where there's a swimming pool in the middle. The whole community faces in on itself. Life is around itself and around that pool. He then shows a top-down view of a contemporary apartment community, which is in downtown Albuquerque, and every window in it faces outward. There is no parking, and there is no interior view to itself. The whole community is faced out. All of the people in there are engaged with the rest of the world. Huge sociologic changes that make a difference in the way we view apartments. May I give a similar example with retail, Steve?
I can hardly wait to hear it.
Okay. Fifth Avenue in New York is probably the most shopped street in America. And if it may not have the highest foot traffic, it's probably got the highest sales per front foot, and it's probably got the highest rents for retail in America. At the corner of 59th and 5th, and 59th runs right at the bottom of Central Park. So it is the corner of 59th and 5th is among the most expensive retail real estate in the country. There is a building on the northeast corner of that street where there is a plaza on the street corner that's about 100 feet deep in both directions with two office buildings built behind it. That space, the 100 by the 100 right there, could be hugely expensive space, but you can't build on it because it would cut off the view lines of the office space behind. So the temptation becomes, can we use it for basement space, which would leave the court still visually proof? Well, yes, but how do you get people to go to a basement? They not only did it, but it's the Apple Store in Manhattan, as some of your listeners know. And the way they did it, they built a glass cube that is about 30 feet square and 40 feet tall that the office tenants can see right through, but it has the Apple logo etched on it on all four sides. And the only thing that happens in that cube is that there is a shaft elevator that comes up on a bronze shaft that you see rise up and down in the cube that invites people to come down. But the truth of the matter is very few people use that elevator because it's just to prove that you can go down. There is a long spiral staircase from street level down. Somebody has been clever enough to figure out how to get people to go to a basement, to change the total view of the way people retail.
That's three of the four sectors, Sam. What about the industrial sector? People can't be doing too much crazy, edgy stuff in industrial, can they?
With industrial, the changes are not in architecture as they have been in the others. The changes are in location. Since the 80s, the single largest cost driver for warehouse location has not been real estate, the cost of real estate. It has not been the cost of distribution. It has been the cost of the carry of inventory. How much does it cost to carry that inventory in the warehouse? And so American warehousing has been designed to reduce that cost. But as oil goes to $100 a barrel, and diesel goes to $4 a gallon. In fact, the cost of distribution becomes higher than the cost of inventory carry. And so now firms can afford to carry larger inventory if they can reduce their fuel cost. And reducing their fuel cost means putting their warehouses closer together so the trucks go on shorter trips. So America has moved for 30 years to large warehouse spaces. 30 years ago, a 100,000-foot warehouse was a very large warehouse. I now know of one warehouse of 1.7 million square feet, that is 31 football fields under roof, that was built on a speculative basis. That was probably the height of the trend. people are now going to start to put their warehouses closer together and they will be smaller. So does America go back to more distribution centers instead of fewer? And is your community one of those communities that's apt to win out on that deal? That's the change industrially.
Sam, is there any particular factor in the economy that's driving this kind of ingenuity or creativity in redesigning or reimagining these industrial and commercial spaces?
Yes, and it's demographic. Todd and Patricia start their presentations with discussions on demographics. It's not just baby boomers to Gen Xers. It, in fact, is Gen Xers to millennials. Millennials are very interesting in a couple of ways. I've had a lot of jobs in my life, but I've only worked for three firms. It is estimated that the millennials will work for 18 different firms by the time they're 40 years old. Most of my life, I've owned a house. As soon as I got out of the service, I bought one. It is estimated that most millennials never will, not because they can't afford one, but because they're too mobile. The changes with millennials have some background to them. I've had a retirement plan originally, that went away, 401k. I've had certain things that attach me to employers. Millennials don't. When you've got people like Jack Welch saying to his workers, to America in general, when I send you your check on Friday, we're dead even. Neither one of us owe each other anything. Why should a millennial take my baby boom attitude that I am devoted to a particular employer and will work things out? So if you're trying to hire these folks, if you're Facebook or any of the other social media firms and trying to hire them, indeed, the only way to get them to stay is to constantly keep them happy and amused. You have to create the space the way they want to be or they will leave. Same thing with apartment communities. If, in fact, you're going to have a series of people coming into the economy who are very well paid but highly mobile and don't wish to own a place, does that suggest some things about changes that should be coming, that will be coming, that are coming in apartment communities? So in large part, it's demographic. With industrial, it simply changes in cost parameters from the cost of inventory being the real driver to the cost of fuel being the real driver. So there are different ones, but generally they tend to be demographic, Steve.
So are there any new trends in this edgy design that you see coming along that are a little bit different from what we've seen already?
How far can you get your crystal ball out? Now, in my case, I'm not the most creative guy in the world. I tend to see trends. I tend to see first adapters and then judge very quickly. I pay a lot of attention to them and start to judge on whether that is going to stick or not. But I will admit that I'm not a person who has the vision that I can see it before the first person adapts to it. And I'll give you one thought, and it's the way I shop, the way we all shop. I don't do retail business, but I shop. I'm like everybody who's going to hear this call. I have some opinions about it. I've shopped in malls my whole life. I'm not particularly attracted to them, but there have been reasons they're there. But there are two malls in Los Angeles who have taken the roof off. They want to be outdoor places. I like that experience. I have seen any number of retail centers around the U.S. where they are built to look like, not an enclosed mall, but mainstream America from the 50s. That the fact of the matter is there's a street down the middle of them, but it's a little bitty two-lane street with a lot of speed bumps. It's there more for look than anything. All of the shops face out onto the street. They're big, wide sidewalks. The coffee shops and cafe are encouraged to have tables on the street, and all the parking is outboard behind the buildings. So I can only judge those things, Steve, as I see them, as I see the first one, and I say, oh, I think that's going to work. You've got to talk to somebody clever and more creative than I am to get that crystal ball out in front of the first happening.
So that's the View from the Edge presentation that you do as part of the Signature Series. Let's change the pace a little bit and talk a bit about your program with Amy Naraki on tenant representation. You give a program about how to set up an effective and successful tenant rep practice.
Completely different from View from the Edge, the tenant representation presentation that Amy and I do is very, very practical. And the way Amy and I do it, Amy is a corporate real estate officer. She was head of real estate for Cypress Communications. Amy starts out by saying, I hire tenant representatives. What am I looking for when I hire them? What do I expect? Why do I pick one over the other? How do you win my business? What do I want to see you say and do? And how is it different? How is that different from a standard brokerage practice? To represent a major American corporation, what do I need from you that you may not be doing with your other more local tenants? Then when Amy is done, I stand up and say, I'm a broker. Okay, folks, Amy has just hired us. She's told us what she wants. Now, how do we perform so that we exceed her expectations? And I literally go through a toolkit from the first step of an assignment with Amy to the last step of an assignment with Amy, from defining what it is she wants to celebrating what we did together and all of the steps in between, and tool by tool show the audience what it is and how you use it. And then, as I said, at the sponsor's website, Amy and I will hang templates of the tools on their website so that anybody who was engaged by what we said can go back and look at one of our tools. They're clearly going to want to adapt it. It's not going to be perfect for them as is what their assignment is, but it's a place to start.
Any parting thoughts you want to leave with the audience about either of the presentations, Sam?
I do want to tout the tenant representation presentation. Just last week, I gave the tenant representation presentation to the Arcadia Board of Realtors in Arcadia, California, for their annual performance. One of the members of the audience who was also on the committee that put the presentation together is a gentleman who's a commercial real estate broker, and he is an architect. He's an AIA, and he's also got an MBA. And he wrote me the kindest note afterwards saying that it was the single most useful presentation he had ever heard.
Well, that sounds like a very good endorsement from somebody who has seen a lot of presentations.
Exactly.
Sounds great, Sam. Thanks very much for taking the time to be with us on the podcast, and good luck with the programs.
Thank you, Steve. I'm grateful.
Sam Foster, CCIM, is Executive Vice President with Jones Lang LaSalle's Los Angeles office. He's a member of the NAR Commercial Signature Series Speakers Bureau. And you can get more information about Jones Lang LaSalle by visiting the website jll.com or joneslanglasalle.com. And for more information about NAR Commercial, visit the website realtor.org/commercial. If you have comments or suggestions about these programs, please write to us. My email address is steve@lubetkincommunications.com. We produce these programs in the studios of Lubetkin Global Communications in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. For everyone at NAR Commercial and the National Association of Realtors, this is Steve Lubetkin. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you out there on the net. Take good care.